22 minutes past the hour of 6 o'clock on the morning show on WBAI Numsa Mazumai. On this morning show, and thank you so much for joining the broadcast this morning.
Sounds great. It sounds sunny in here, even though it's rainy outside. We're going to turn to a pressing international issue. After the midterm elections, Obama traveled to Asia for the APEC summit, a gathering of leaders of the Asia-Pacific region. High on the agenda there was the U.S.-backed Trans-Pacific Partnership, a proposed free trade agreement between the United States and 11 other Asia-Pacific countries, from Australia to Chile to Japan, which together represent 40% of the global economy. Part of Obama's stalled pivot to Asia, the agreement would open up markets in Asia to the United States and create new rules for all the countries involved to operate under when trading with one another. It would be the largest international trade agreement since the World Trade Organization was created in 1995. The TPP, which was announced in 2008, has been in negotiations for years, but there seems to be real movement toward an agreement now, and Congress is considering giving President Obama fast-track authority to negotiate the deal without oversight. To understand this agreement and what it means for the U.S. economy and U.S. workers, we're joined now by Adam Weissman, an organizer with Global Justice for Animals and the Environment, an organization addressing the threat posed by free trade agreement to animals, the environment, and the safe, ethical, and sustainable food, and the human rights of environmental defenders. He also represents this organization in Trade Justice New York Metro, a coalition of organizations from diverse social movements working together to resist the NAFTA neoliberal free trade model. Adam, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for joining us. So can you tell our listeners what exactly the TPP is? What kind of provisions go into this kind of trade agreement?
Well, TPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, it represents a major broken promise by President Obama. In 2008, he campaigned as a reformer on trade issues. He promised the nation, fed up with the 1 million jobs that we lost as a result of NAFTA, that he would either renegotiate NAFTA or pull the U.S. out of NAFTA altogether. Instead, he has launched negotiations on three major trade agreements. The first is the Trans-Pacific Partnership. The second is the Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership. And the third is the Trade and Services Agreement. But the TPP was the first of those negotiations. It's been going on since 2008. There are 12 nations involved, representing a total of 40% of the global economy. This is an agreement that is being negotiated in secret. There are our members of Congress have extremely limited access to the negotiating texts of TPP. The media, the public, NGOs are largely locked out of accessing these documents. What we do know about TPP, we largely know through WikiLeaks. The people who do know about what's in TPP, though, are 600 cleared trade advisors, part of trade advisory committees, who are mostly members of industry groups and major corporations who have a vested interest in advancing a model of free trade, or really what they call free trade, but which is actually even more insidious than that, that benefits their interests, often at the public expense.
And so talk a little bit more about that. What are the consequences of the TPP here in the United States? Who is going to benefit and who's going to lose?
Well, it's important to understand that TPP, as much as it is called a trade agreement, is really a Trojan horse. This can really better be understood as a mega corporate rights agreement. There are 29 chapters to TPP. Only five of them really deal with trade. The rest of the agreement deals with a range of issues, including intellectual property rights for corporations, which will have the effect of limiting access to essential medicines by expanding corporate patent rights over drugs and limiting access to generic medicines. These same intellectual property rules will also limit our use of the internet and limit internet freedom by creating an extreme regime of intellectual property over internet usage that will in effect turn your internet service provider into a cop policing your internet use. Things like your computer making a buffer copy of a file could be something that you could be held, which is an automated computer process, is something that you could be held liable for. If you download a recipe and email it to your mother, you could be prosecuted for that. TPP includes restrictions on government procurement rules. So if, for example, New York tries to pass legislation requiring that our government purchase green products or that we want to support local content in the products that we buy. We could be restricted from doing that under TPP for the benefit of corporate foreign investors. TPP will limit our ability to regulate the financial industry. So the regulations that we put in place in response to the financial collapse and future necessary regulations to further rein in the financial industry could be threatened. Economists, even many who are generally supportive of free trade, have expressed real concerns that this trade agreement could limit the ability of countries to put in place capital controls that prevent capital flight to prevent devastating economic collapses. And that's something that capital controls at this point are increasingly recognized as a very mainstream and very reasonable way for countries to protect their economic interests. TPP will also limit our ability to make our own laws, protecting the public interest. Under TPP will include a NAFTA-style investor rights chapter,
right.
What's called investor-state dispute settlement, which is a lot of words, but what it means in effect is TPP will set up a system of corporate courts that give corporations the right to sue our government in international tribunals outside the jurisdiction of our court system, where unelected international trade lawyers arbitrate cases where corporations can sue our government for expected future profits in any way that they feel our laws get in the way of their profits. So, for example, let's say the state of New York decides to ban hydrofracking because it endangers our water supply and endangers our food. A Japanese corporation that is invested in fracking could sue the state of New York, not for the amount of money that they have already invested in fracking in New York, but for the total amount of money they think, in theory, going into the infinite future, they might have been able to make on fracking in New York if we had allowed them to do that. Now, if that sounds crazy, if that sounds like a wild conspiracy, if that sounds like that could never happen, we should be aware that that is already happening under NAFTA. There's a case where Quebec banned fracking, and now a U.S. company is suing Canada for Quebec having the audacity to protect its citizens from toxified water. Japan is the largest importer of liquid natural gas, which is the form in which we export fracked gas. So it is very likely that any fracking ban would be challenged under TPP. And that's only one example of how these extreme investor rights can be used to really attack democracy, attack our ability to pass laws that protect our own interests and protect our own people when those rules get in the way of corporate rights.
So it sounds like we have some real environmental consequences, first of all, from this so-called trade agreement. But so if the negotiations have been going on since 2008, why is there sudden movement? And does Congress want to give Obama this so-called fast-track authority to negotiate this deal?
Well, the idea that there's sudden movement, there's some truth to that, and there's also a little spin on that. First of all, the negotiations have been going on for years, and they keep running into roadblocks. We've been hearing again and again and again about the deadline for negotiations and how they're going to wrap this thing up, and they've missed every deadline they've set so far. Now, it is true that there does seem to be some progress in the recent negotiations. There have been major stumbling blocks about Japan not wanting to open their agriculture to U.S. corporate agribusiness and wanting to keep tariffs in place that protect Japan's farmers. That's been a major stumbling block. It does seem like some of the issues are now coming closer to being worked out. But part of the reason this is being spun so heavily right now as the negotiation speeding ahead, which it's really not, is because of the fact that with Democrats losing the Senate and Democrats losing seats in the House, there's the opportunity to spin TPP as the one thing that Obama and the Republicans can agree on. Well, in reality, a lot of the Senate Democrats already were very enthusiastic about these kind of trade policies, so that isn't that much of a change. We do have to be concerned about some of the new House Republicans, so there definitely is a fight here. But the thing to really understand is the first fight in fighting TPP is the fight against fast-track authority. Mm-hmm. And that really is what the battle line is right now. Fast-track is a Nixon-era policy that really violates the spirit of Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution, which splits powers on negotiating trade between Congress and the White House. It puts Congress in charge of our international commercial agreements. Now, the White House, the administration, is the part of government that actually tends to do that does negotiations with other governments. So it puts Congress really in the driver's seat there. Now, what Fast Track does is gives the president the authority to go ahead and negotiate trade agreements with other countries with really no obligation to listen to anything Congress has to say. And then Congress is required under Fast Track to take the completed negotiation that the administration has put together and vote on the trade agreement that that the administration has negotiated in 90 days, 60 in the House, with no ability to amend a single word, letter, comma, period, anything in the agreement, with limited floor debate. They can only debate the agreements for 20 hours. The clock starts at 20 hours, and then at the end, that's done. So basically, it is a very deliberate policy designed to railroad bad trade agreements through Congress. Mm. People don't have enough time to study them. They don't have enough time to discuss them, and they can't change anything about them. So this is the devastating approach that has allowed trade agreements like NAFTA to be passed, that has allowed the U.S. to enter the World Trade Organization with terrible consequences. Mm-hmm. The U.S. lost 1 million jobs as a result of NAFTA, and it's precisely because of this fast-track policy. Now, the good news is that fast-track expired in 2007, so there's been a big fight about reauthorizing fast-track. Earlier this year, the Congress did try to move fast track at the president's request, and it went over like a lead balloon. They couldn't find a single Democrat to sponsor a House version of the bill. In late last year, 151 Democrats wrote to President Obama expressing opposition to fast track. 23 Republicans signed one letter against fast track, and 6 Republicans in the House signed another. So there is strong congressional opposition to fast track, but there is a real fight on our hands here.
So, speaking of that fight, how can people here in the New York area get involved in the organizing that, for instance, Trade Justice New York Metro is doing around the TPP?
Well, Trade Justice is working in every congressional district in the metropolitan area to let our elected officials know that voting for Fast Track and supporting Fast Track is totally unacceptable, and that we need to hear from them now that they will oppose Fast Track in any form. We've seen in the past that members of Congress will often try to clean up Fast Track by giving it a new name. They called the version earlier this year the Bipartisan Trade Priorities Act of 2014. Ron Wyden, the Senate Finance Chair, was talking about calling it Smart Track. What form it's going to take and what it's going to be called, with Republicans taking the Senate again, with Orrin Hatch now in control, that we don't know yet, but at the end of the day, Fast Track is Fast Track, and Fast Track needs to be rejected. It's against the spirit of the Constitution. It is against the spirit of democracy and constitutional separation of powers. Our members of Congress need to do their jobs and have this role in overseeing and really influencing these trade agreements that have such a profound effect on our lives. People need to call their members of Congress. You can find out who represents you by going to tradejustice.net/LEG, that's all lowercase. And you can also contact us if you'd like to get more involved. We'll put you in touch with people in your congressional district who are already working on this issue, or let you know how you can work to influence your member of Congress. People can reach us at info@tradejustice.net. You can also call us at 718-218-4523. And to learn more, people can visit our website at tradejustice.net. And for Global Justice for Animals and the Environment, if you want to learn more about the environmental aspect of these trade agreements, you can go to gjae.org. That's gjae.org. And we really, this is if you'll excuse the cliche, a David versus Goliath effort. There were massive aligned corporate interests against really our rights and against democracy in support of these agreements. So we do need everyone to get involved in organizing in their own communities against these terrible trade agreements.
An important fight going on. We've been speaking to Adam Weissman, an organizer with Global Justice for Animals and the Environment and a member of the Trade Justice New York Metro Coalition, about the upcoming fight over the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Adam, thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you.